topic we have slated for today is a very serious topic. Chomer in terms of its implications, chomer in terms of its material, and an issue that is very much of a concern both to Jews and to non-Jews, both for reasons Talmudic and otherwise. And we don't represent that we can do the topic justice in one shir, but hopefully we'll get a little bit of an overview, and I'll try to put some of the issues in perspective and also in a framework that's relevant a little bit to the national discourse to some extent. And we come at this topic primarily through the sugya of Uber Yerachimo that we had been doing earlier in the week, Tosfos on Mem Zayin, which brings up that subject. And elsewhere in the parak later on, there are also references to the status of Lodos, etc. It's also the fact that Nezikin and Chiyuvei Nezikin is one of the major points of reference when we talk about abortion. The fact that in the Torah, in Parshas Mishpatim, it sounds like the key impact of somebody who induces an abortion in a woman is monetary. We treat it as a property loss, so to speak. So the question becomes, is there an isser in a more formal sense that's associated with abortion? And we find perhaps some conflicting indications. On the one hand, there is, as we'll see, some basis to see it as not only usser, but akin to Ritzicha, or within the heading of Ritzicha. And there are other sources which indicate that it's of a lesser severity than Ritzicha. And there are sources that almost sound as if it is not an issue at all, which is hard to believe, and most of the Achronim don't take it that far. But there certainly are Rishonim that we have to deal with a little bit more to figure out exactly how to understand their implications. So on the one hand, the idea that it's somehow a part of Ritzicha is understandable intellectually. You know, it's a question that general society and other religions have grappled with. On the one hand, it seems like we're dealing here with a human being on some level, and since Ritzicha is generally the extinguishing of human life, so then the question of whether that's the appropriate model here is a self-evident question. The conclusion is not self-evident, but the question presents itself. I sometimes mention in the ethics class that in general there's a discussion about how one's religious beliefs impact on one's public policy decisions, especially, for example, the question that the Catholic politicians, this comes up a lot recently in New York State, where the current governor, his father also, perhaps to different degrees, are professed Catholics. It was much more the case with the father, with Mario Cuomo. But the question of can that be bifurcated or can that be compartmentalized when you are fulfilling your secular role as governor of the state or some other legislative role, it's difficult because this is not simply a question of a particularistic religious belief. It's a question of how do you address the issue that is self-evidently there, that if we as a society have concluded that we can't murder people, so then we have to figure out, is this murder or is it not? And clearly there is what to talk about that, and it's also very possible that it's something else, that it's not murder, but it's another issue. But the question is inescapable, and therefore to ask, say, a Catholic politician to separate out all he has in terms of his religious training to address that philosophical question, I think, is very difficult. So in any event, this is an issue that society is going to deal with regardless of what your religious views are. So it may be indeed the case that the halacha gives us material to see things a little differently, and that's often argued with justification, that the halachic view is not identical to what's perceived the religious right, whatever they call it nowadays, and the more extreme pro-life position, but there's still a lot that has to be figured. Has a lot that has to be figured out in between, and we'll get a chance to mention also that we alluded to this earlier in the week that in the context of American discourse, so everything boils down to a slogan, and slogans shouldn't be given too much weight because everybody just chooses a slogan that they feel puts their position in the best light. But here, it's relevant to understand the impact of the slogans. So in America, they use the slogans pro-choice and pro-life, and pro-choice being associated with either anything up to abortion on demand for any reason or things that move closer to that opinion. And pro-life, which goes as far as saying no abortions ever, but also that which is closer to that opinion. So it might be a different discussion whether you're talking about should abortion be permitted or should it be restricted and to what degree. That might be one discussion as far as the halachic view. The role the slogans play, I think, is also something that we should pay a little bit of attention to, and that might be a separate discussion. It might be one thing to say that abortion is something which the halacha at least has room for leniency, at least within certain opinions and within certain circumstances, but to identify that with a pro-choice opinion carries extra baggage, and we have to discuss whether that's appropriate or not. So on the one hand, there are these reasons to see it as ritzicha. When it comes to Bnei Noach, when it comes to society as a whole, and this complicates the discussion for halachists also, because we're often addressing the question on a broad societal plane. So we recognize the fact that the Gemara in Sanhedrin that you saw, the Gemara says that Bnei Noach are nereg al obrim. That regarding the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, there is a chi of misa when that is associated with killing a fetus, with killing an ober. So that would seem to suggest that it is connected to Ritzicha. We know that Bnei Noach are subject to 7 prohibitions. So presumably it has to fit into one of the 7 that we have. So it sounds like it's an issue of Ritzicha. It's not mukhrach like that at a lot of levels, because first of all, the 7 prohibitions, we see many indications throughout Shas and other rabbinic writings that the 7 prohibitions are really umbrellas that expand into many subdivisions, and you could count up many more than 7, and the discussion may indeed be more complex. And also, we'll talk about this a little bit more, but the implication that it's a capital crime, that there is a chiyuv misa for that, doesn't have to equal saying that it's absolute ritzicha, especially when looking at it from the Ben Noach position. So that's something that we'll have to figure out a little bit, but that is one of the major issues to deal with, is that giving us the impression that it is ritzicha. Now, for Jews, when you consider the parameters of ritzicha, so it doesn't seem like that's actually the way abortion is treated for a number of reasons. One is that ritzicha is a chi of misa, and for Jews it does not seem to be that that's the case. Why that is, that's a discussion. There are a number of different opinions, but we don't find that Jews are a chi of misa for abortion. Further, ritzicha is associated with a rule of Yehareg v'al yavor, that when it comes to a question of give up your life or commit this avera, so ritzicha is one of the so-called big 3, to use technical terminology, and it's subject to a rule of Yehareg v'al yavor, and we do not allow one to murder someone else even if they're going to lose their life in refusing to do that. So this rule, we know explicitly from Mishnayos and elsewhere, does not apply to abortion. That the Mishnah tells us in Olos, the Mishnah is quoted in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that you saw, that if a woman is undergoing a mortal danger through pregnancy, So then we do abort the fetus if that's what's going to make a difference. And therefore we see apparently Yehari V'Yavor is not the rule when it comes to abortion, at least as far as Jews are concerned. Now, we mentioned as far as Jews are concerned, so what's the story with non-Jews? So when it comes to non-Jews, do they have a rule of Yehari V'Yavor when it comes to abortion? So here, you could ask the question, what would we say halachically? And you could ask the question, what do they say practically? So halachically, there's what to discuss if you see it as absolute ritzicha. When it comes to the actual policy among non-Jews, obviously there is quite a range of policies, but very often the position associated with the Catholic Church is to treat it as Yehari V'Yavor, in other words, not to prioritize the mother's life over the life of the baby. So you could say they're learning up the sugya that way, or you could say it comes from other reasons. I was heard from my father that the issue was that from a Catholic perspective, so you are only considered saved in terms of life in the afterlife. You're only considered saved if you have been baptized. So therefore, the mother, who presumably has been baptized, so if she dies, okay, at least she has eternal salvation in their perspective. But the baby has not yet been baptized, so therefore there is a greater urgency to protect the life of the baby than there is to protect the life of the mother. So that's clearly not coming from a halachic place, but there is an argument to be made within a halachic perspective also. But in any event, for Jews, we see that that's not the case. So the Mishnah distinguishes between before birth and after birth. So in the case of the Mishnah, if the baby has not yet been born, so that's when we prioritize the life of the mother. In the context of afterbirth, after the baby has been born, if, let's say it's stuck out its head, that's the lesson that we find. There's different versions of the language in different places in Shas, but let's work with that. So then we cannot take such lethal action against the baby, which is now a baby rather than a fetus, because ein dochin nefesh b'fnei nefesh, that we're not allowed, essentially, Yehari V'Yavor, we're not allowed to push away one life in order to save another life. Okay, so far so good. Everything makes sense. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin that you saw, the Gemara raises the question, well, why don't we look at this child as a rodef? Why don't we look at this baby as a rodef? So the Gemara responds that mishamayim karadfa, that this is not the child trying to hurt the mother. This is a situation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put the two of them in. And therefore, we don't view it through the lens of rodef.
Hi. Rashi seems to point to the katan rodef as a katan being rodef after another katan.
Right.
Is there a concept of a katan rodef achar hagadol?
Well, if this was an example of it, then that right. would be what's going on.
So is that how we do it?
Well, that's the big question. So what role does rodef play in this discussion? So it sounds like from the Gemara that we're essentially saying is that rodef is not really the factor here. And that, therefore, once the baby is born, so we can't do anything to the baby because of the Yehari V'Yavor rule, and because the baby is not considered to be a rodef. So, therefore, what's the difference between before birth and after birth? So, presumably, the difference is that there's a fundamental distinction, that before one is born, so it's not called a nefesh, however you want to translate that. It's maybe called, it's a little bit of a semantic question what you want to emphasize, whether you want to call it life that's not human or human that's not life. I could see one using the terminology in either direction, but it doesn't seem to have the full status of a human life. So that's what Rashi's language sounds like. And that would seem to indicate that it's not Ritzicha. That's how many understand the view of Rashi. So if that's the distinction, okay, so we get it. But when it comes to the Rambam, there's been a lot of discussion. And the Rambam, we saw the list also in Hilchos Roseach Ushmiras HaNefesh. The Rambam does use the language of comparing the baby to a Rodef, which is a pretty significant distinction. Because if the assumption is that abortion is only mutter to save the life of the mother because of redifa, so then that essentially could preserve a rotseach kind of framework and saying that it's only mutter because of the redifa that's involved. So that's a big discussion.
What is that? Talking about an Uber, not a...
Right. It sounds like that even the Uber is only allowed to be dealt with this way because of the Rodef status.
If it's Rodef, I would make a difference in this before or after birth.
So that's a good question. So then apparently the nature of the Rodefa becomes more complex. But the Rambam is troubling. The Rambam is difficult in terms of the Gemara. My father, Zechon Lebracha, in his book, he brings 13 Mahalchim and the Achronim to explain the Rambam. So we're not going to go through all of them, but just so you know, the Rambam's a big discussion, and there are many, many different ways to look at this. It's relevant, clearly, to a lot of other things also. There is a question sometimes of an Uber being Rodef another Uber. That I discussed this once many years ago for the Medical Ethics Society. There was a famous case that involved Moshe Feinstein, and it comes up in other situations also, of conjoined twins. And the question is, are they? If the doctor says that only one can live, or if the metzias is that separating them will lead to the death of one, save the other one. So is that a situation where you could take such action or not? Obviously, dvarim ha'omdim merumah shel olam, these are things that are tremendously severe. So Rav Moshe was involved in one very publicized case about this, about which a lot has been written. So that Rambam, understanding exactly what the Rambam is getting at, is important for that discussion also. So the Rambam is certainly one of the major points of discussion in the question of is Ritzicha involved or not. And others thought that some of the language in the Rishonim didn't sound that way, like Rashi, and like the Ran, which we saw yesterday, and which we'll go in a little bit more to today, that is really the link between, the direct link between yesterday's discussion of Uber Yerachimo and this discussion. So the Ran is the real segue from one into the other. But there are other sources in Halacha which also indicate that perhaps we're not dealing with a full-blown Ritzicha here, or maybe even not an Isser at all. Some of the Rishonim seem to have language that sounds like that. Many Achronim disputed that that could actually be the conclusion. There's a Tosus and Nida that sounds like that, and Daf Memdalet and Mibbeis. And one could almost argue that the Ran sounds like that. But in a lot of these cases, it's likely the situation that these Rishonim aren't saying that it's Heter Gomer. They're saying that regarding whatever other circumstances are involved, it's not going to be the dominant consideration. But presumably they don't mean to say that there isn't any Isser at all. They presumably mean to say that there can be other factors that outweigh it. And in whatever situation we're looking at, it's not a full-blown Ritzicha or something in that category that would make it impossible to accommodate in that situation. So there are other theories as to what exactly the nature of the Isser is, if we're not going to say that it's Ritzicha. So what else could it be? So there are those who have suggested, the Chavis Yair in his tshuva, he suggests that it's an aspect of Shchatzah Sarah Levatala, and that, you have to understand exactly what that means. That a number of Achronim take an approach along those lines, and presumably what they mean, as it emerges, is that it's a Kal V'Chomer. That if we're going to say that there's an Isser even before the formation of a Vlad, even before there has been the creation of a pregnancy, there's an Isser to interfere with that. So then it seems difficult to say that in actual pregnancy there's no Isser to terminate it. It seems like a Kal V'Chomer that if we're so concerned about protecting this potential, that even when it's just a potential, and it hasn't formed into actual pregnancy, there's an iser. So kal v'chomer, there should be an iser regarding the actual pregnancy itself, not to terminate that. So that was a question, how to understand that, and that's a big discussion as well. Is that really a kal v'chomer, or is there some difference in the nature of the iserim that one shouldn't necessarily dictate how we understand the other? So that's one of the discussions that you find. There are also those who assume that it should be looked at as an act of chavala, and a chavala on the mother, say, and that would not necessarily rise to the level of ritzicha, but wouldn't necessarily tell us that it's something that's up to the victim. We know that when it comes to chavala, so we find that there's an iser chaval ba'atzmo as well. So even though chavala can be justified in certain circumstances, but that doesn't mean that it's up to the nechbal to decide that he wants to undergo this. So that would not necessarily be the conclusion of working off of that possibility. Hi.
When we're talking about the iser, are we generally speaking about the iser being on the mother for sanctioning it, or the iser being on whoever aborts it, or the iser somehow being on the father also? Like, who's the iser on primarily?
Yeah, presumably that's an important discussion which could involve all of the above. That the action definitely has some weight to it, the one who's actually performing the action, and that's where you sometimes find the distinction evoked in the literature. Should it matter if the doctor's Jewish or the doctor's not Jewish? If we're talking about the issue being in the category of tzich or not. And there are those who suggest that if we look at it through the prism of Hashchas Zera, so then you have to figure out, is that a prohibition that applies equally to men and to women? Should it be better if it's a female doctor? Does it make a difference that the mother is female? Does that impact on things at all? So that is a discussion. So it clearly goes to a focus on the Maisa, a focus on who is actually performing this action. But clearly when it comes to issues like this, one who's willingly participating in an action that's going to be labeled Ritzicha for sure, or certainly other serious Yisurim, so it's going to also spread out to one who is permitting that. So presumably the number one person to look at is the one who's actually performing it, but all the other players are clearly going to have a role.
Can you see even the husband, theoretically, the father, could have be held, I guess, accountable to a degree?
So it depends. You know, we talk about enabling and lifneiver and participating, so there's always different parameters. You know, in America it's also going to make a difference because
legally
it may not have any impact, that the father may not have any say in the matter. So then that's going to limit to what extent you can hold him responsible or not responsible for the decision. Jed?
So just on Chavos Yair, so just to understand Shekhla Zerba Batala, he would be saying that that applies like up until the baby's actually born, and then once it's born, it turns into
Ritzicha.
It wouldn't be Shekhla Zerba Batala to also kill a person.
Presumably not, or presumably it's not something that that becomes significant anymore once you're talking about Ritzicha. And again, you know, it's important to try to understand what he's getting at by saying something like that. I don't think he means to, and other Achronim would take this approach also, I don't think they mean to equate them in severity or in degree, or to say that that's the whole story, but focus on the fact that it seems like there's a kal v'chomer here, because why should it be prohibited at the pre-pregnancy stage and be okay at the pregnancy stage? But again, there's what to figure out about just exactly how to analyze that. Hi.
Chavala is with the assumption that it's a chavala on the guf of the woman?
That's what it seems like, yeah. Especially.
Do you have to say we are in look on that?
Not necessarily. Presumably, it makes a little bit of a better fit to say that it's a b'yarachimo, because the question, if it's not yarachimo, so then what is it? So then is it a human being who is subject to an iser chavala? It's a little harder to say that. So it becomes a little bit more complicated. It works a little better with the b'yarachimo kind of approach. There are those who have invoked the question of Baal Tashchis. That's also a little bit of a problematic fit. That's been brought into the conversation as well. So there are other possibilities, especially coming from the Kal V'chomer perspective, there is an issue here that has to be figured out, and certainly creates a certain kind of apparent paradox, that we say that one can be Mechal Shabbos to save an Uber. So that seems to pose a conflict to the possibility that it's not murder, but even more so to the possibility that it's mutter. It seems very difficult to say that you are Mechal Shabbos in order to save an Uber, but you could also choose to kill it if you want to. So that's something which many struggle with. And it's in that context that Tosfos and Nida that we mentioned before, on Daf Mem Dalet, has the phrase mutter, and again, you have to figure out just how far to go with that. Hi. It's a mutter to kill the Uber, despite the fact that it's that we say, right, that Tosfos and Nida is in that, it's in the context of that question that Tosfos says that phrase. So, and I'll say a little bit more about that. Question about that?
Is it possible to view that as maybe we just value the potential of life at the Akhtha moving the Chal Shabbos?
It's very possible to say like that. So you have to figure out exactly how the parts come together. So first of all, the fact that we are Mechal Shabbos to save an Uber, so that is clear in Gemaras, that we know that we, in general, if the mother is undergoing a fetal crisis, so we would be Mechal Shabbos in order to resolve it. It gets a little bit complicated because in many of the cases, it's hard to separate one from the other, that we can worry that the mother's life is also at risk from the situation. So just like we would permit abortion to save the mother's life, so we would also permit saving the baby to save the mother's life on Shabbos. So the assumption that we can separate them out is tricky, although sometimes it's possible. The Gemara does also talk about if the mother has already passed away but the baby is still inside, to allow Chil Shabbos for that. But there are some who question maybe we should draw a distinction, like we discussed yesterday, that maybe the question is how far along is the pregnancy, that should we only start treating the baby as a human being when it's reached a certain level of development. The Gemara Nivamas has a phrase that before 40 days, that's a very early stage of development, that the fetus is kamaya ba'alma, that the fetus is like just water. It doesn't have really any status. And so many poskim, sorry? It's Gemara Nivamas. So many draw from that to be significantly makel in the first 40 days. It's not always helpful because the situations that come up, you can't necessarily predict when they're going to happen. So sometimes a medical crisis, or very often the medical crisis that's prompting this question, will emerge after 40 days. But when it's before 40 days, so that probably changes the nature of the Shaila significantly. Not all poskim thought so. There were some who didn't put so much emphasis on that, but many did assume that the 40-day marker is very significant. That has major ramifications for the morning after pill, that if a woman is raped, so then the question comes up that nowadays there is a pill that one can take that will abort any pregnancy that would have been created from that, and that's taken the next day. So there are those who are opposed to that pill. I'm saying that necessarily with an halach, I'm saying in the world in general, there's been controversy surrounding that pill because it's essentially a abortion-inducing drug. But many poskim would take the attitude that because we're talking so early on, before 40 days, that's a fundamentally different shaila. So a lot of the medical considerations, whether they are challenges to the mother's health or whether they are medical issues within the fetus, don't necessarily present themselves early enough to make that window. But this issue, the issue of a rape, that you would know before 40 days, so that does make a significant impact on that question. So the issue of saving an Uber, so we find that we are Mechal Shabbos for that in that case, and apparently even the early stages of pregnancy, that's the view of the Bahag, which the Ramban quotes in the Torah Sa'adam, and others quote. So that seems to be the din, that we're Mechal Shabbos to save an Uber even at an early stage. So then the question becomes, is it somewhat of a paradox to say that we're Mechal Shabbos to save this life, and yet it would be permitted to end this life? So, question about that? So, of course, you could ask that question in two ways also. You could say that, does the fact that we're Mechal Shabbos means that it's exactly Ritzicha, because we're talking about a life or death issue? We know that we're not Mechal Shabbos for mitzvahs in general, we're Mechal Shabbos for life and death issues. So is the inference there that therefore to end this life would constitute an act of Ritzicha? That's one way to ask the question. Or you could ask the question in a lower level, that if one were to take the position that it's not Ritzicha and it's Mutter, so then that becomes even harder to understand, that we're Mechal Shabbos for something that not only the opposite isn't Ritzicha, but it's just something completely permitted. That's hard to swallow. But nonetheless, it is a discussion, and there is room to draw distinctions, as Maury was indicating. So many of the Achronim explain that if the idea of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is Chalel Alav Shabbos Achas Kidei Sheyishmeru Shabbos Harbe, that it can be Mechalel Shabbos because this will allow for much Shmira Shabbos in the future, that ultimately this is in the interest of Shabbos, so then there's room to say that even though this is not yet a full human life, however you want to use the phrase, but ultimately, God willing, it will be a full human life that will keep Shabbos. So therefore, the svara that allows Chilul Shabbos for a born human being would apply to the fetus as well. So does that still allow for it to be looked at independently of any Isser Ritzicha? Perhaps. We find this paradox not only here. It comes up also in end-of-life issues. And the truth is, there's probably a lot of parallels between beginning of life issues and end of life issues in halacha. But there are sometimes circumstances where a person in an end of life situation has options in front of him. Does he have to pursue a certain course of treatment or not? And you have the same kind of paradox, because we would be Mechal Shabbos to save the life of somebody, even as the Gemara says, even if it's only Chai Shah, even if it's only going to be a temporary salvation, they're only going to be alive for a short period of time. So we do allow Chilul Shabbos and command Chilul Shabbos even for certain situations like that, which at the same time we still might give autonomy to the patient to decide whether he wants to pursue it or not. So you have that same kind of paradox on a certain level, that we're saying that it's important enough to be Mechal Shabbos, but it's not important enough that we're Mechayiv to follow that path. So the contradiction, or the paradox, is maybe not as much of a contradiction as it sounds like. And you do find that in halacha. It seems to be that the basis of this Pikuach Nefesh Svara on Shabbos is that there will be a net gain to Shmira Shabbos, and therefore it's a valid path to pursue, but at the same time there could be other cheshbonos, not that it's the only cheshbon. So it seems to be that's an easier middle ground to understand, that you don't have to say that it's actually Ritzicha, that the opposite would be Ritzicha in order to allow Chilul Shabbos for it, but it's also hard to say that it's completely up to choosing, that it doesn't have any Yisr at all. Presumably it means that when there are other considerations, those other considerations may have weight, even if without those considerations we would justify Chilul Shabbos in order to follow this path. And I think it's reasonable to say that that's what Tosfos and Nida is getting at. Tosfos has that language where it says that yes, it justifies Chilul Shabbos, but still it's mutter to do. Presumably it doesn't mean it's mutter to do without any concern. Presumably it means it's mutter to do when there are other reasons to do that. Now, among those considerations, so we saw yesterday the Ran in Chulin. I don't have a Chulin here, but I did scan, so I have the Ran with me. Should always run around with the Ran. So the language, the Ran, you saw probably its entire content by now, but the Ran, you recall from yesterday, went through the whole question of Uri Erechimo. And the last line the last few lines is what's very significant for us. So in the end, the language of the Ran is, so there's a good part to start from. Okay, so talking about the position of Rabbeinu Tam, that Uber Lav Yerachimo, so the language of the Ran is, Vahahi Nami de Erechin Dav Zayin Amad Aleph, De Isha Hayotzli Hareg, Eimon Tinen, that a woman who is about to be executed, we don't wait, Eimon Tinen La Achetelet, that we don't wait until she gives birth, Lav Mishum Uber Yerech Imohu. In other words, not to say that, well, since the Uber is part of the mother, so the Uber is also Chayiv Misa, that's not what we're saying. Ella shekeva and shehi mechuyevis misa. Since she, the mother, is chayiv misa, ein ma'anin es dina. We don't delay the judgment. We don't keep her waiting on death row. That's a halachic principle in general. V'la vlad, and regarding the vlad, keva and shlo yotza la'over ha'olam. Since the vlad has not yet been born, lo chayshina lo ad shetelet. We don't take that into consideration to wait until she's born. Lav mishum uber yerech imahu. It's not because the uber is part of the mother. No, I'm sorry, I just skipped the line. I went back a line. Sorry. That we don't worry. Sorry. So to go back. I just reread the same line because the scan is curved. So kevin shliyotzel avra olam. Since the baby has not yet been born, lo chayshinan. We don't take this into fact. We don't take this into consideration. Teida she'ilu nigmar dina lahariga. You should see from the fact that had she been judged to be executed, v'yalda, and the baby was born before the execution, in horgenes avlad mishum dober laviyarechima. We don't kill the vlad because we don't assume that the uber was a part of the mother that was chayiv misa. V'lo'olav nigmar hadin, and the din was not said about the baby. There's some discussion, some achronim read this run is to saying that, oh, that if we say uber yarechimo, then we would execute the baby separately, that if the baby was born before the hariga, we would execute the baby because he was also chayiv misa. It's a very hard conclusion to come to. And as others explain, it doesn't seem like the run really means that. The run is just saying that you don't need to say uber lav yarechimo. You know, you don't need to say that this din is connected to that. You don't need to say that the fact that we execute the mother who's pregnant is because of Riyarachimo. So, what can be derived from this, Ron?
It still seems like it's a contradiction.
Which sounds like it's a contradiction?
The fact that we don't wait, that if she's going to be killed before she gives birth, then we kill a pregnant woman.
Right.
And if she gives birth.
Right.
Then we don't then kill the Uber isn't chayiv misa either. That, I mean, that sounds like we're saying because Uber lav yerechimo.
Right.
If
so
Uber is lav yerechimo, then we should wait because we're killing two people.
Oh, so then what's the point here? So then what's the, so it sounds like what the Ran is trying to isolate is that despite the fact that this baby is not chayiv misa and was not a part of the Gemar Din, we still carry out the execution as is. Now, why do we do that? Because the factors the Ran mentions is that the mother was judged to be chayiv misa, and we don't want to do inui hadin. We don't want to delay that process. We don't leave people on death row. And that's one consideration. And we don't worry about the vlad because he wasn't born yet. So what's the Ran saying with those words? These are important words. Right? So it sounds like one could read it as saying, okay, there's no Isser to kill the Vlad, so all we're worried about is the Inui Hadin. Although presumably, similar to the Tosus and Nida, it doesn't mean that there's no issue at all with killing the Vlad, but that there is a fundamental difference between before birth and after birth. And since this baby has not yet been born, it's not subject to the full consideration that a born human being would get, and we pay more attention to Inui Hadin.
It sounds more like saying that, it sounds more than saying Uber Lav Yerachimo, it sounds like we're saying that there's no entity until it's born.
We're saying that, but again, I'm saying no entity, that sounds like a very sweeping statement, so we don't know what no entity means, but there's some big difference. That's clear in the round, that there's some major difference before birth and after birth. That before Kevin Shlyotzel Avir Olam, since it wasn't born yet, so therefore we don't factor it in. Now, does that mean it's heter gomer? Presumably not. Presumably it means that the inui din is a greater consideration than worrying about the vlad specifically. So here, there's a couple of factors to consider in general. That, you know, there was a major machlokas achronim about how far do we go with the medical justification for abortion. This is an issue which is very much a current debate. And we know from Chazal clearly that when the mother's life is threatened, then that's one of the cases. But what if it's not her actual life that's threatened? What if it's psychological well-being? What if there's something about the pregnancy that is going to be so difficult to bear that the mother says she just can't handle it? Or the reality may be that she's going to have a very difficult time handling it. So this was a major machlokas achronim, and it comes up in the context of, let's say, for example, part of where this is discussed is, let's say, if the baby has Tay-Sachs, Rahman al-Islam. So we know that it's impossible the baby is going to survive more than 3 years or so, and will unfortunately go through terrible suffering until then. So is that a justification to terminate the pregnancy, especially in light of the tremendous torture the parents are going to go through having a child for just a few years under those circumstances? Is that a justification for an abortion under those circumstances? So most famously, the Tzitz Eliezer in his tshuva did allow that, and Igros Moshe was strongly opposed. Igros Moshe taking a view, perhaps one of the more extreme views, that it is actually Ritzicha, or very close to Ritzicha, was on the other side of this issue. And this is very much a part of the contemporary debate. It seems like this Ran is very relevant to this discussion, because Inui Hadin is a concept that we invoke for the Rachmanis of the Nera, the person who's going to be executed by Beis Din. So we consider it to be cruel to be Ma'ana the Din, to leave them on death row waiting for this to happen. That's why we do it quickly. So in other words, to have Rachmanis on the mother in this case, that's why we kill her before the child is born. So as jarring as that might be to think about, but that essentially is the elements that are essentially the elements that are at play here. So if that's the case, it seems like that's a cheshbon which is being invoked that is considered to be of greater priority. So that's a big question, exactly how that plays out. Clearly there are all kinds of variables that influence that discussion, and that's a major contemporary machlokas. So it's also worth considering that, to go back for a second to the Ritzicha model, so a number of Achronim discuss the possibility that it is Ritzicha, but somehow different. That we have to account for the fact that there's no Chiyuv Misa, we have to account for the fact that there is no Din of Yehari Vayavor, these are pretty much explicit dinim. So it's possible to say that that's indeed the case, that there's no Chiyuv Misa, perhaps because of drushes from Sukkim, perhaps because of the usage or the lack of usage of the word Nefesh or Adam, depending on the context. There are those who suggest, their aim thought that there's no Chiyuv Misa because you don't know if it's a viable fetus, so you can always have a situation of Hasra Safek, you'll never have a definite Hasra, so to have a context of Chiyuv Misa. When it comes to Yehari Vayavor, there are those who suggest, the Chazanish and others, that when it comes to a grown person, so the Gemara says, you can't kill someone else to save your life, because my chazis, didama didach, sumaki tvei midama didan. How did you decide? What gave you the right to conclude that your blood is redder than his blood? So that logic that all born human beings have to be treated as equal, it's a very important topic to discuss in general, what the implications of that svara might be. But it could be that in this case it's not true, that there is a categorical difference between a born human being and an unborn human being. So therefore, the Svara of Yehar V'Yavar may not apply. So it could be that you have something here which essentially comes from Ritzicha, but nonetheless is still limited, doesn't have certain major details of Ritzicha. So then you have to ask, okay, so how do we know which chumras apply and which chumras don't apply? That becomes a difficult transference into practical halacha, because maybe it's rooted in Ritzicha, but still differs in some pretty major ways. So we might have still some pretty glaring questions as to how exactly to apply it. There's some who have a language, the Maram Shik and others, have a language of Chatzi Shir Ritzicha. So Chatzi Shir, it sounds like it's kind of a Pulpulisha technical connection. But just to explain what that phrase means, that we talk about Chatzi Shir normally in quantitative discussions. That if you're not allowed to eat Chazer, if you eat a Kazayas of Chazer, you get Malkus. If you eat a Kazayas of Chametz and Pesach, you're Chayev Kares. But nonetheless, if you have less than a Kazayas, so you're not going to be Chayev Kares for Chametz or Malkus for Chazer, but it's still prohibited. Prohibited, that's the concept of Chatzi Shir, that's a Gemara in Yuma and several other places. So the concept of Chatzi Shir we know exists by these quantitative kind of things. And there's discussion in general whether it comes up by qualitative considerations. What they call Chatzi Shir Be'echus. So that's a topic that's discussed by many Achronim, there are various indications in the Rishonim. But just to clarify what it would mean here, is that the concept of Chatzi Shir essentially reflects a category where you have the essence of a certain Avera, but you don't have the conditions to have a full liability. So if you eat a little bit of Chazer, so you have the essence of the Isser of eating Chazer, but you don't have the Shir Kazayas that will trigger full liability with a punishment. So it could be that using that phrasing here is that you have the essence of the Isser Ritzicha, but you don't have all of the consequences, you don't have all of the parts in play that trigger the full consequences of Ritzicha. So then again, what are the implications going to be? It's not clear, that still might be variable, but that's something to think about. It's also worth considering, I'm not sure how much relevance this has, but when it comes to the Isser Ritzicha, and here again you have a tremendous parallel to end-of-life issues, so, and this also has tremendous ramifications for ethics of war issues. I gave Kol Yom Rishon Shir about this once. I'll explain this in much greater detail. But when it comes to the Isser Ritzicha, especially, it seems that there are two components to it. There is the impact, you know, the fact that killing someone generally has a tremendous impact on the world. And there is a technical action Isser, that the Maisa Ritzicha has its own formalistic prohibition, regardless of the consequences. In philosophy, there's sometimes a distinction drawn between formalism and consequentialism. Formalistic, yes, sir. That, in general, just to say this very quickly, and I went into this in more detail in this Kol Yom Rishon Ethics of War discussion, if you want to listen online. But in general, in philosophy, we talk about whether something is prohibited because of its consequence, or is it prohibited formalistically? That regardless of looking at consequences and judging and evaluating how they impact, categorically it's prohibited. So when it comes to Ritzicha, especially, you have elements of both. That murder is terrible because of the impact it has on the world. And parallel and separate from that, the Torah prohibits the action of murder because it is a denial of the value of life. That God gave us life with infinite potential, and to commit an act of murder is an insult to that value. So often we draw distinctions, and if we had more time, maybe we'll take a Sunday to go into some of the other implications of this. But there are ramifications of looking at the two of those things. So, for example, this comes up very often, just to give a quick, very serious example, let's say in end-of-life decisions. So sometimes you'll have a situation where a person really feels that he can't go on in life and he's very compromised physically. And one might argue that in terms of the impact on the world of this person passing away at this point, it's not a tremendous negative impact, that their life is essentially over as far as that's concerned. But, and they're suffering, and therefore maybe there is some advantage to their life not continuing for them themselves. But there's still a maisa ritzicha. There's still a prohibition of an act of ritzicha. So therefore, in end-of-life issues, we find a tremendous distinction drawn between an act of ritzicha, something that would actually kill someone, and we call hasaros moneya, taking away an impediment to death. If there's something keeping a person alive, sometimes we find that there is justification to remove that, because that's different than actually killing them. So there's a big difference whether or not there is a maisa involved. Hi.
Is DNR more in the second category, or is it?
So DNR gets complicated, you know, and I don't want to do injustice to the very serious ramifications of that topic, but theoretically that's where the conversation begins. You know, is this considered to be a passive allowing of nature to take its course, which is not pashut by itself, there are all kinds of other considerations, or when are we dealing with actually killing someone? So that's the key issue that we have to make sure, among other issues, but that's a key issue that we have to make sure we're not actually performing a maisa ritzicha. So when it comes to abortion, you could have some similar considerations as well. That one consideration is the impact, and another consideration is that the act itself is something which could be looked at as a insult to a Kadosh Baruch Hu's gift of life, and therefore something that we would take very seriously, something that we would be very hesitant to, certainly to be casual about. So that might be a factor here, and I don't know to what extent it might be relevant to the Ran. That the Ran is discussing is not really an act of abortion. The Ran is talking about executing the mother. The Ran is commenting on the Gemara, that's talking about executing the Gemara, executing the mother. So executing the mother is not a maisa abortion. It will lead to the fetus not surviving, but it's not itself an act of abortion. I'm not sure if that distinction might be relevant here, that in terms of maybe limiting the scope of where the Ran is going to be relevant, that that might be a factor. I don't know if it's clear from the words of the Ran that if the situation required an actual maisa ritzicha, so to speak, or a maisa abortion, however you want to categorize that. Not sure if he would have said it the same way. Hi.
Why would that be different? Either way, if we're killing either.
Because maybe when we see, especially when it comes to ritzicha, one issue is the impact, and the other issue is the maisa. So it could be here, maybe there is no maisa abortion. It's just a question that it's going to have the impact of an abortion, but maybe that impact is considered to be less of a priority than the impact of the Inui Hadin, as far as that has an effect on the mother. So maybe that just is going to be relevant in terms of how these elements play out. So it is also possible to say, whatever the implications are, that it's connected to Ritzicha in terms of the spirit of Ritzicha, that if the Issa Ritzicha as a Maisa is a statement of disregard for life, so then potentially that's the case here as well when it comes to abortion, without necessarily bringing with it all the severities, all the chumras that are associated with the ritzicha. It still could theoretically be connected to the value system. That's something to be concerned about. So just before we run out of time, just to say overall, so as far as the contemporary debate is concerned, I think we have to be very careful in either direction with our language and our positions, because it's clearly true that Judaism does not take a absolute anti-abortion in all circumstances position. Right? Clearly we do mandate abortion to save the life of the mother, and it's possible that we would also allow it in many other circumstances. That's subject to a great variability among poskim and the great sensitivity to various circumstances. So to say that the position is a complete absolutist anti-abortion stance would not really be faithful to the details of halacha or even the spirit of halacha. But the way it's formulated, pro-choice, does create difficulties for us as far as philosophy, because I guess it depends how you want to read it. If you want to read it in kind of a minimalist sense, that America respects the religious diversity of its population, and therefore we give you the ability to choose your religious persuasion and how that will impact, then that's one way of reading it, but I don't know if that's really how it's conveyed most of the time. That the implication of the phrase pro-choice usually is that this is something that we feel is a total neutral point, and it's up to the individual to decide what they want to do without any kind of judgment in any direction. So that, philosophically, is hard to square with a halachic position, which just means, again, to be careful in terms of how you express your positions in the broad landscape of the American discussion, because it could be that one should support in some circumstances, and it's going to be a complicated decision what and when, but a greater flexibility towards abortion permissibility. But again, the language of pro-choice is one that's a difficult language to adopt. So between the two, you know, in terms of the impact of the language, pro-choice and pro-life, so clearly we are much more comfortable with pro-life. And the converse of what I was just saying is that if pro-life means that you can never allow abortion ever, so then it's going to be difficult to square that with a halachic view. But the spirit of the slogan of pro-life, that does very well fit with the halachic attitude, and especially because that's the clear guideline, whether it means that we're advocating for the life of the fetus, the life of the mother, and therefore that might be at odds with the life of the fetus, or other considerations, the thrust of the pro-life message is one that we clearly are much more comfortable with. So I think we have to be careful in terms of the language, in terms of how that impacts on us. And this is also true regarding the issue of Roe v. Wade specifically, about the Supreme Court ruling is now more than 40 years old. So if one just looks at that in the abstract, as not prohibiting abortion, so then okay, there's more room to see that as a neutral kind of issue. But part of what is troubling, setting aside the question of the legal foundations of such a ruling, but the logic behind it, that there's a right to privacy, and that this is something which is simply about what the mother wants to do and it doesn't have any other implications, is one, again, which is difficult to fit comfortably within a halachic perspective, even if some of the conclusions might be consistent. So, again, we can't really do justice to this topic in one shiur. There's much, much more written about this than we can really give proper attention to, but that's somewhat of an overview. Does that make sense? Any major questions about that? Okay, so just very quickly, we went through, you know, the question of, is it Ritzicha or is it something else? Or is it even possible to say that it's not prohibited at all? We saw the indications that it is Ritzicha from, it sounds like, from the context of Bnei Noach, and also perhaps certain logical premises. On the other hand, we see that it seems like it's not Ritzicha from the fact that we don't apply a Din of Yehari V'Yavar, we don't apply Yechiv Misa for Jews, and we talked about what the implications could be of that. We talked about some other possible sources. Is it an issue of Hashchas Zara? Is it an issue of Chavala? Or is it an issue of Ritzicha, but not in the full sense, Ritzicha without the chumras of Ritzicha, and perhaps in the spirit of Ritzicha, but without the chumras of Ritzicha? So then we'd have to figure out what exactly are the implications of that. We also talked about, can we live with the paradox of saying that we're Machal Shabbos in order to save an Uber, and as the Bahag understood, even at the very early stages, but to still say that it's either a mutter to kill an uber or that it's not Ritzicha. And we talked about various possibilities, how we could perhaps make those positions coexist and various parallels to other issues in medical halacha, such as end-of-life issues, where you find many parallels. And we talked about the Ran and the implications of the Ran. And we made a possible distinction between the impact of Ritzicha and the Maisa Ritzicha, and how that may have parallels here as well. that might have to be a part of the discussion. And then we talked about being very careful about how we consider the issue in the public sphere, considering that you could look at it as a question of, are we allowing for abortion or are being very restrictive? That's one way to frame the issue. But the issue in the context of the slogans of pro-life and pro-choice do frame things in a significantly different way, even if they are, for practical purposes, identified with each other. And that's also something that we have to be careful about in terms of how we let that characterize our thinking. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow.